We are in our series called Hope in the Dark. This is our second to the last week, and I'm not even sure if we have any books left, but we've been also going through, touching on some parts of a book called Hope in the Dark with the same title with Craig Groeschel, and some groups are even going through that, but it's a great book. If we don't have them available and if this is something that you need right now in your life, please go and check that out and take a look. So we've been looking at this prophet named Habakkuk, and at least you've learned that there is a prophet named Habakkuk, or you know how to say it now, right? You've always wondered how to pronounce that, and or some people say Habakkuk, but he's a prophet in the Old Testament that was writing in a time of great struggle and great frustration in the nation of Israel. He was complaining and frustrated and angry with God because of just continued wickedness and problems. You see evil in the leadership of Israel. He saw injustice playing out in the culture. He just was frustrated with everything he saw because it doesn't line up. It didn't fit who God is and the character of God, and he just had a hard time reconciling that. And it relates definitely to us today. It's same questions, same thoughts, same difficulties and times of darkness and hardship that we all go through in our life. And so he's asking God, where are you, God? When are you going to answer me? God then finally responds, kind of alludes to the fact you're not going to like my answer, but I'm sending a nation, the Chaldeans, the Babylonians, that were going to come and wipe out this nation of Israel in the south. God was going to use them as his way of judging what was taking place there. And he then goes, oh my gosh, God, what? Like, you can't use the Babylonians. They're even worse than the leadership of Israel. Their society and their laws are worse than the laws and the society that we have here. And he just doesn't understand it. And then God responds to him in Habakkuk 2:2-4. We looked at 2 and 3 last week. So just to kind of refresh that as we talked about the importance of the Bible. And then we'll finish up with verse 4. Which is what I want to look at today. So let me read this to you. The Lord answers Habakkuk, write the vision, make it plain on tablets so he may run who reads it. For still the vision awaits an appointed time. It hastens to the end. It will not lie. If it seems slow, wait for it. It will surely come and it will not delay. Let me stop right there. This is what we looked at last week. Just the importance of, he's basically telling Habakkuk, write this down so that not only can you read it, but other people can read it and they can hold on to it in the midst of the darkness, in the midst of the struggle, so that they can have a promise, something to go to, that when things are really hard and really bad, you can remember God promised that it's going to get better, that things are going to change, and you hold on to this. And so he told him to write it down. And that's what we talked about last week, the importance of reading the Bible. I saw some of you picked up some new reading plans on YouVersion. That's awesome. I got to see that for some of you. I'm sure there's many others I didn't even know. But the Bible helps prepare us for the darkness before we ever even get there. And that's one of the most important things you can do in your life is learn how to actually read the Bible for yourself and understand it. Get a good Bible translation, a Bible that has a little bit of study helps in it, and pick up the YouVersion Bible app and read through a devotional that helps you understand this. It'll change your life. It'll make you have a one-on-one relationship with God and not a third-party relationship, not a relationship with God through somebody else or through something else, but you knowing God and hearing from him. It's crucial and it's vital. Now, we're going to look at something today, and honestly, I'm changing directions just a little bit. The Lord just kind of just shifted my heart yesterday afternoon, which is pretty late for me, but enough time to put something together. Not hard, actually, because this is something that is meaningful to me. But I was going to talk about specifically that verse that Nate read. That's why we did the song. We planned this out like 6-7 weeks ago. I'm not even much of a planner, and it's like, God, like, I actually thought several weeks in advance, and now you're going to change it? Like, come on now. But God has that prerogative. And so we're going to look at this next week, and we'll lump all that together in our final week and talk more about Shadrach, Meshach, and Winnebago, or Abednego. I used to say that all the time when I was a youth pastor. And those three guys had an incredible, incredible moment there with King Nebuchadnezzar. In fact, the king of the nation that Habakkuk was frustrated was coming. That's just a little bit before that time. And so they literally told that king, as Nate read it, like, it doesn't even matter if God doesn't save us, we're not going to worship you. And to get to that point in our faith, to me, it sounds a lot like what we do at a wedding. And so we'll look at this next week when the bride and the groom sit up there and they basically say, for better, for worse, I'm with you. That's what we can do and where we can get with God. But here's what I really felt the Lord just yesterday afternoon in my heart just say, that many of you need encouragement today because you have felt discouraged, honestly, by your own, you sense your own self as a failure before God in relation to what we're talking about. And I just could sense it from the Lord of that we need to talk about this first before I challenge you to hang in there with God, because for some of you, you feel like you've failed God. And probably for the vast majority of you, I mean, some of you may literally be rebelling, you're running from God, you won't have anything to do with him, and man, God still loves you, and there's an opportunity for that to change today too. But for many of you, you've self-labeled yourself a failure before God, and God hasn't even done that. And so when you look at a story like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and we see them having such faith, if we're really honest in this room, we probably wouldn't tell anybody else. We may not even say it out loud to ourselves. But we read a story like that, and we think, there's no way that I could do that. Like, I've always thought when I read the story, like, why don't you just, like, bow down with your fingers crossed, like, behind your back, right? Yeah, sure, I'll bow down. Yeah, I don't care about you. I worship Jesus. Like, you really? Like, isn't there a different alternative to the fire? Does anybody else feel that way, or is that just me? Like, I'm crossing my fingers and bowing down? That's just me? Rest of you? Oh, first service needed it, not you. Let's pray. I'm just kidding. I think most of us think of people like that and think, I could never do that. I could never do that. And when in fact, and this is a little bit we'll touch on next week, is, you know, there's more people dying today, this week, for their faith in Jesus than ever before in the history of our world. And as Americans living in such an amazing country where our biggest persecution is because someone may make fun of you or not invite you to a party or wonder why you're not joining them with their drinking or whatever they're doing because you're a Christian, that's about the worst of the persecution you're ever going to face. When today, tomorrow, this week, more people will die because they say that they love Jesus than ever before in history. As Americans, we don't even fathom that. That's why I've tried to relate this as Americans for this entire series. We have everything at our fingertips. We have instant gratification. We have what we want. It builds entitlement in our relationship with God. It builds that he needs to do something for us instead of us doing something for him. And it affects us in a whole lot of ways. But one of the things is that because we have lived in such comfortable environment, comfortable lives, we have a hard time imagining that we could have faith like that. And so we just condemn ourselves. I don't have faith like that. I've really struggled. I lost my job. I got sick, or I have the situation in my family, and I just fall apart. I don't know if I trust God. I don't even know if I believe in him. And we just think I could never be like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And I want to encourage you today that maybe God would see you a little differently, or that you can do a little bit more than what you thought. And so we got here to this place in Habakkuk 2, 2, and 3, and it says it's going to come. Hang in there. And for a lot of you, you think, I don't do good at hanging in there. I'm not patient. And then God gives us this great verse in verse 4. Behold, his soul is puffed up, and it is not upright within him, but the righteous shall live by faith. As you take things out of context, sometimes it's hard to understand. But the first part of this verse, basically what God is saying is, there is a way that people live in which they're puffed up, which they're just arrogant. In other words, they just live trusting themselves. And he says, oh my goodness, that is not an upright way to live. In other words, other translations, it says, that leads only to destruction. You'll see that in a different verse here in a moment. There are people that are just trusting themselves, and then there are those that choose to trust me. And he says, those are the ones who are with me. The righteous will live by faith. The righteous will live by faith. What I want to help us do, and I felt like the Lord wanted me to encourage you with today, is faith doesn't always look exactly like you think it is going to look. It is not always just being perfectly steadfast, like you see Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in this one moment, and you think, oh, that's the kind of people that really please God. That's the kind of people, that's what it really means to be a Christian and follow God. And you read a verse, the righteous will live by faith, the just, those that know God and are favored by him live by faith, and you think, I don't have that kind of faith. I struggle. There's no way I could do it. I want to encourage you today. I feel like God wants to encourage you. So I want to jump all the way to the New Testament in Hebrews, and we're going to come to Hebrews chapter 11, which is known as the great chapter of faith, and it's been nicknamed a whole lot of different things because it basically is the history of the world, really, but the history of the people of God, starting at the very beginning, and I'm coming all the way to when the writer wrote this, and it's going through what they call the heroes of faith. They call them the heroes of faith. And maybe you've read this before, and maybe you'll see it in a different light today. Many of you probably have never read this before, never heard it. And I'm going to read actually this whole chapter. I don't usually do that, but it's kind of interesting. It's kind of in short snippets like we're used to on television and YouTube anyway. So I think you'll find some interest. But before we go to Hebrews 11, we need to read what's right before Hebrews 11. Why the writer starts talking about all these great people of faith. Because if not, we're going to read it like you always have read it or like you normally will read it, and you'll just compare yourself with everybody in that list and think you are nothing but a failure. Like you'll never have faith in God like that. But here's the whole thing. Here's the prelude to Hebrews 11, and it actually comes from Habakkuk. Habakkuk chapter 2, verse 4. It's this verse again. There's a famous little verse that Paul used several times in Romans and in Galatians, and here it is in Hebrews. So it says this: don't throw away this confident trust in the Lord. Remember the great reward it brings you. You should know this really quick before I continue reading it, that the writer here in Hebrews, much like Habakkuk, is writing to a group of people who are struggling, who are being persecuted. And with all due respect to the issues you might be going through, I don't think you're facing quite the tragedy these people are facing. I mean, it is a disastrous, terrible time that they're facing in the time of the Roman world right now, being executed, burned alive for their faith, terrible time. And he's wanting to remind them to hang in there. So he says, don't throw away the confident trust. One part's missing in that translation, that you had it first in the Lord. It's like when you first met God and you were all excited. He says, I don't want you to lose that confidence that when you first met him, everything was going to work out. Verse 36, patient endurance is what you need now. Patient endurance. So that you will continue to do God's will. Then you will receive all that he has promised. For in just, and here it is, he starts quoting Habakkuk and also Isaiah. For in just a little while, the coming one will come and not delay. And my righteous ones will live by faith. But I'll take no pleasure in anyone who turns away. But we are not like those who turn away from God to their destruction. We are the faithful ones whose souls will be saved. You see, again, at first glance, we read that, and some of you would read, oh, see, God's not going to take pleasure in me because I struggle in my faith at times. And really what this is saying is it's piecing together Isaiah and Habakkuk at the same time. Is it saying, listen, those that are accepted by God, that are blessed by him, that have relationship with him, are those that trust him in faith. Those that trust, remember what I said earlier in the passage in Habakkuk, those that trust in themselves, those that live arrogantly thinking, I don't need God. God says, I can't do anything for you. And in the end, it's only going to lead to your own destruction. I can't do anything for you if you don't think you need me, and God's not going to interrupt the person whose life is living that way. And so, what does it look like? Well, we get to Hebrews chapter 11. So I'm going to read this with you. I think you'll be able to track with it, even though some of you may not know many of the stories here. Just follow along with me as I read this, and then I'll break it down for you, and you'll catch a lot of this when we get done. All right, Hebrews 11, first one. Now, faith is confidence in what we hope for, and assurance about what we do not see. Confidence in what we hope for, things in the future, and assurance of things that we do not see, the things that are not readily, physically visible or even that we can touch and feel. This is what the ancients were commended for. This is what God praised them for because of this faith that they had. Verse 3, by faith we understand that the universe was formed at God's command so that what is seen was not made out of what was visible. By faith, Abel brought God a better offering than Cain did. Cain and Abel were the first two children of Adam and Eve, the very first creation. By faith, he was commended as righteous, and God spoke well of his offerings. And by faith, Abel still speaks even though he is dead. And if you remember the story, if you know the story, Cain killed Abel because he offered the correct sacrifice and he got jealous of him and killed him right at the very beginning of everything. Verse 5, by faith, Enoch was taken from this life so that he did not experience death. He could not be found because God had taken him away. For before he was taken, he was commended as one who pleased God. Enoch, it says in Genesis that Enoch was walking with God and God took him. Right? Crazy. That's what you've all prayed the day before your tests or the day before you have one of those really difficult conversations. God, just take me home right now, right? Well, God actually did it to Enoch. That'd be kind of creepy if you took a walk and you were just gone. But God just took him. He did not die. Only one or two people in the Old Testament that were just taken away. Verse 6, and without faith, it is impossible to please God because anyone who comes to him must believe that he exists and that he rewards those who earnestly seek him. By faith, Noah, when warned about things not yet seen, in holy fear, built an ark to save his family. By his faith, he condemned the world and became an heir of the righteousness that is in keeping with faith. Verse 8, by faith, Abraham, when called to go to a place he would later receive as his inheritance, obeyed and went, even though he did not know where he was going. By faith, he made his home in the promised land like a stranger in a foreign country. He lived in tents, as did Isaac and Jacob, his son and grandson, who were heirs with him of the same promise. For he was looking forward to the city with foundations whose architect and builder is God. And by faith, even Sarah, his wife, who was past childbearing age, was enabled to bear children because she considered him faithful who had made the promise. And so from this one man, and he was as good as dead, came descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky and as countless as the sand on the seashore. I always think it's funny that God's nickname for Abraham, in a way, was as good as dead. You're Abraham, as good as dead. Oh, man, that's rough. Verse 13, all these people were still living by faith when they died. They did not receive the things promised. They only saw them and welcomed them from a distance, admitting that they were foreigners and strangers on earth. People who say such things show that they are looking for a country of their own. If they had been thinking of the country they had left, they would have had opportunity to return. This is kind of just using an illustration metaphorically. He's talking about they knew that there was something beyond this life on earth, that there's more to this existence, talking about faith being in the things you cannot see. They knew there was something beyond this existence, this physical life on earth. So instead, they were longing for a better country, verse 16, a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them. Now, several more people. Verse 20, by faith, Isaac blessed Jacob and Esau in regard to their future. And then by faith, Jacob, when he was dying, blessed each of Joseph's sons and worshiped as he leaned on the top of his staff. Verse 22, by faith, Joseph then, when his end was near, spoke about the exodus of the Israelites from Egypt and gave instructions concerning the burial of his bones. By faith, then, Moses' parents hid him for 3 months after he was born because they saw he was no ordinary child and they were not afraid of the king's edict. My parents were ready to send me away because they knew I was not an ordinary child. Okay, sorry, I digress. Verse 24, by faith Moses, when he had grown up, refused to be known as the son of Pharaoh's daughter, and he chose to be mistreated along with the people of God rather than to enjoy the fleeting pleasures of sin. He regarded disgrace for the sake of Christ of greater value than the treasures of Egypt because he was looking ahead to his reward. By faith he left Egypt, not fearing the king's anger. He persevered because he saw him who was invisible. By faith, the people, this would be people of Israel, passed through the Red Sea on dry land. When the Egyptians tried to do so, they were drowned. By faith, the walls of Jericho fell after the army had marched around them for 7 days. By faith, the prostitute Rahab, because she welcomed the spies, was not killed with those who were disobedient. And then it comes to a conclusion. And what more shall I say? I don't have time to tell you about Gideon and Barak and Samson and Jephthah and David and Samuel and the prophets who through faith conquered kingdoms, administered justice, gained what was promised, who shut the mouth of lions, quenched the fury of flames. That would be a reference to Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And escaped the edge of the sword, whose weakness was turned to strength and who became powerful in battle and routed foreign armies. Women received back their dead, raised to life again. There were others who were tortured, though, refusing to be released so that they might gain an even better resurrection. Some faced jeers and flogging and even chains and imprisonment. They were put to death by stoning. They were sawed in two. They were killed by the sword. They went about in sheepskins and goatskins, destitute, persecuted, and mistreated. The world was not worthy of them. They wandered in deserts and mountains, living in caves and in holes in the ground. They were all commended for their faith, yet not one of them received what had been promised, since God had planned something better for us, that only together with us would they may be made perfect. Okay. Whew. A whole mouthful. Read you a whole chapter. You did good. You did good. Here's the writer is wanting to encourage the people that he was writing to here, the Hebrews, that even though you're going through a really tough time right now, even though you're getting persecuted, he's wanting them to remember the just will live by faith, the righteous live by faith. We trust God through the thick and thin. And then he gives them all of these people for them to look up to in their faith. Here's the problem. We normally read a list like that and you're like, see, that's not me. I don't have faith like that. I'm not conquering kingdoms and administering justice and shutting the mouth of lions. But the thing is most of the time we read this, and most people that would read it, maybe we don't have a good understanding of the Bible. We have not been taught a lot in the Bible. And you understand that there's something else that's going on here, something that you're supposed to read between the lines in Hebrews 11 that is not supposed to discourage you in your life, but actually encourage you when you look at these people. So the writer is basically saying all these people, most of them have a few things in common. And let me just tell you, my first point may catch you off guard today, but what they, most of them have in common is this, that their faith was actually far from perfect. Their faith was far from consistent. And you don't know that if you don't know a lot of the stories here, so I'm going to break a few of these things down for you. But what makes it funny is these are not the people that you would naturally think about if you were wanting to tell everybody, you need to have faith like these people. This is not the people that make the list. If you're a sports fan, even if you're not, you probably understand this, but there's a lot of stadiums or gyms that have where teams play, whether it's high school, college, or even professional athletes, professional stadiums. They retire people's jerseys. You ever seen that in a gym or around a stadium? You retire a jersey because that person played so well for the team. They scored so many points. They're that team's leader in wins or in whatever it might be in the individual categories in individual sports. They retire their jerseys as a way to like honor and respect them. Have no fear, your pastor has no jerseys retired anywhere. They're reusing my number every place I played. But you put them up on the wall because it's a way to say, you know what, we don't want anybody ever to use that number 4 again, because that's a way to respect and honor what they did for our team. And I'll just be honest with you, when the writer of Hebrews starts talking about these heroes of faith, and he goes like, I want you to hang in there, and I want you to have faith like the people of old, you would think he's going to like start showing the jerseys that are hanging on the wall. I'm just telling you, most of the people on this list are not getting a jersey. Not in the way that we keep score, but for some reason in the Bible sees things differently. And I pray that that's encouragement. It's very similar to the genealogies in Matthew and Luke when it talks about how Jesus came to be. I mean, the writer there pulled no punches. I mean, they put in crazy Uncle Eddie and, you know, the aunt you don't want to talk about. Like, they're all part of Jesus's line. And he did the same thing here with heroes of faith. I am just telling you, some of these people, not only would their jersey not have gotten hung, but if it was, I think someone would have ripped it down in some cases. So we're going to look at this because it's really fascinating and I think will be encouraging for you. Because what I would say the writer is pointing out more than anything at the very beginning is, you know what most of these people have in common? Their faith was not perfect. Their faith was not perfect, but they still acknowledge them. We'll look at the reason why. So let's just start with Abraham. Don't worry, I'm not going to do every one. I know you're scared. We're not going to do every one. Verse 8, it talks about Abraham. It says, by faith, Abraham, when called to go to a place that he would later receive as an inheritance, he obeyed and went, even though he did not know where he was going. This is true. God called him out of like kind of a modern day Iraq, getting close to Iran, and said, I want you to go west to this promised land. We know that as Israel today, he had obviously no idea, never been over there. He would only know it maybe hearing about it from trade routes, and this is where he'd always lived. This is where his family was. And so God says, I want you to go, and he just got up in faith and he went. And we'll give him credit for that. But along the way, God also tells him, listen, because you responded to me in faith, just because you trusted me, even though you didn't know everything and you didn't know where you were going, he says, I'm also going to bless you and make you a father of a nation that is so numerous that the stars in the sky won't even be as many as your prodigy, the line that will come from you. So he's got these two promises. You're going to get this land and you're going to get all these descendants after you. And so the Bible says, hey, you're a great man of faith. You would think that makes sense. But if you know Abraham, some of you don't, let me just read you what happened as Abraham got a little older. In fact, he got quite older. He was about 100 years old, him and his wife. And as you know, you've had your AARP card like a long time by the time you hit 100. And so the last thing you want to hear when you're at that age is you're going to have more children. Come on, grandparents, be honest with me. Like my mother-in-law's here. You visit the kids for a weekend and you go home. God does not show up and say, we're going to start over. You're going to have kids, right? I mean, like, no. I give them cookies and I go home. Like, that's the stage of life I'm in. But Abraham and Sarah thought they were long gone. I mean, the Bible even says he was as good as dead, meaning his body, his sexual organs and reproduction were as good as dead. And so they thought they were long past the promise of God. So this is what happened. Sarah, Abraham's wife in Genesis 16, who had borne him no children, she had an Egyptian slave named Hagar, and so she said to Abram, the Lord has kept me from having children. Go sleep with my slave. Perhaps I can build a family through her. And Abraham, the great man of faith that said, no, God promised me we're going to have children, he agreed. Sounds good. What? Like, I'm just not going to start because of the whole list. I mean, like, what? Abraham, the great man of faith, sure. This doesn't seem to be working. Let's try polygamy, right? I mean, it makes no sense, but he made the list. They hung the jersey. He had good moments and he had bad moments. This would be one of them. Created a major sibling rivalry that caused issues throughout time, all because he didn't trust God to hang in there on the promise. And then it goes on, worse than even Abraham, is in this situation, is the story they talk about with Sarah. Verse 11, and by faith, even Sarah, it says, who was past childbearing age, was enabled to bear children because she considered him faithful who had made the promise. I have to read this to you again because it's hilarious. And that's a double meaning here. It says this about Sarah. She was past childbearing age, but she was enabled to bear children because she considered him, God, faithful who had made the promise. That's interesting if you actually read scripture, because in Genesis 18, when the angel was there talking to Abraham and saying, you're going to have kids, and Sarah at this point is in her 90s, like nobody wants to hear that anyway in your 90s, right? But she's listening to the angel, and the angel says this, I surely will return to you about this time next year, and Sarah, your wife, will have a son. Sarah was listening at the entrance to the tent, which was behind them. Abraham and Sarah were very old, and Sarah was past the age of childbearing, as the Bible keeps telling us. And then Sarah, the great person of faith, said, well, but God, if you said it, then I believe it. That's what we just read in Hebrews, right? But in reality, Sarah laughed to herself as she thought, after I'm worn out and my Lord, Abraham, is so old, will I now have this pleasure? Is anybody else kind of not catching, like is the writer of Hebrews, should that have been in the Bible? Like, does he know the stories in the Old Testament? Because she didn't say, yes, Lord, I believe you. Yes, I believe it. In a year, it'll happen. She laughed. Cynicism rose in her heart. She thought it was a joke. Okay, I'm jumping ahead, but listen, how many of you can relate to Sarah that you feel like God has told you things or you are believing him for things and not faith, but cynicism and laughing rises up in your life sometimes? Yeah, right. We all can relate to her, can't we? You see, at first you read Hebrews 11, you think these people are perfect. They're far, far from it. All right, let's keep going. It gets better. Verse 20, it talks about Isaac blessing Jacob and Esau in regard to their future. For those of you who don't know, that's the interesting way they wrote that sentence, because Jacob is the second born, not the first. And really, in those days, you would never have written the firstborn second and the secondborn first. But it's telling you part of the history. When Isaac blessed Jacob and Esau, it followed a total like family like deception. Terrible. Even mom was in on it. And we know moms never do that. But she preferred Jacob, dad preferred Esau, and they were coming to get their birthright, their blessing from Isaac. He was getting old and he could not see very well. And so mom devised this plan, terrible plan. She goes and tells Jacob, I want you to steal the birthright, the firstborn's blessing. So she cooked a meal that would taste like Esau's. She put hair on his arms and his hands so that he would feel like Esau, who apparently was very hairy. I think David Hasselhoff, I don't know. And so he went in and totally deceived his dad, Isaac. Totally deceived him and stole Esau's blessing. And yet somehow the writer is like, this is a great moment of faith because Isaac, in his faith, blessed the future of his children. Not to mention he got it totally wrong and totally deceived and blessed them the wrong way, but the Bible somehow still says, but you know what? Even in his mistake and his deception, he still had faith when he did it. I'm not kidding you. How else do you read that? He didn't even know that he was talking to Jacob and Esau when he blessed him, but he did it in faith, and the Bible, the God, rewarded him for it. All right, let's keep going. Verse 23, not much to say here, but by faith, Moses' parents hid him for 3 months after he was born because they saw he was no ordinary child, and they were not afraid of the king's edict. Pharaoh had said, we're going to kill all Jewish babies that are born. He was afraid there was going to be a king. So they had their son, and they, like I think, sorry, any other parent, this is a really special child. This is no ordinary child. We all think that when they're born. Then we find out how they're not ordinary. but the mom and dad just said, what are we going to do? We don't want to kill him. We don't want them to find him. So they put him in a basket. They put him in the weeds, and they just hope that he would survive. And they hung up the jersey because they didn't know what else to do. But they just did it, and they hoped that God would save their child. And God says, hang the jersey. Hang the jersey. Verse 24, let's look at Moses, their son. When he had grown up, he refused to be known as the son of Pharaoh's daughter. This is interesting, and he says he chose to be mistreated along with the people. And eventually, because he was looking ahead to this reward that he found, verse 27, by faith he left Egypt, not fearing the king's anger. He persevered because he saw him who was invisible. Moses, okay. Now, you might come to Moses and think, I mean, this guy was great. I mean, he is well known for leading the people of Israel out of Egypt. I mean, he was a great man of faith. Well, I don't disagree that he had his moments. But let's go back to how it all got started. Moses trying to save someone, a fellow Israelite, kills an Egyptian. He knows that people find out about it. He gets so scared, he runs away. He runs as far away as he possibly can because he realizes that he's really not the man that he thought he was. So he just runs away, just leaves everything behind. He is not yet this person in 27 who, not fearing the king's anger, he persevered because he saw him. No. He is running in fear, and he does it for like several decades. He's out there just tending sheep. He's done. He's not doing this with some feat of, you know, great strength or even just, you know, great servitude. He doesn't want to go back because he's scared, right? And so then he meets with God. And God tells him in Exodus 3, if you don't know the story, in verse 10, God finds him out there, speaks to him through this burning bush and says, I want you to go back to Egypt. Here's what it says. So now go. I am sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt. I want you to go back there. And this great man of faith said, yes, I'll go and I'll get them. No. He said what you and I would say. He said to God, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt? He sounds like every one of you, and I say, would you like to lead a small group? Oh, no, who am I? No, I could never do that. Are you kidding me? I can't teach a class. Hey, your jersey still could get hung. What do you know? There's more than another sermon there. All right, so who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt? And God said, I'll be with you. And that convinced him. No. He said, but who will I say is sending me? And God gives them a whole long another discourse. And after God gets done with that and the name and the power of all this, Moses says, okay, God, I'll go. No. Moses answered, but what if they don't believe me or listen to me and they say the Lord did not appear to you? Oh, this is like my conversation with you. Listen, we'll walk through this with you. You can do this small group thing. Like, it'll be okay, right? Moses is like, no, I'm not doing it. They won't believe that I know enough. They won't believe that I have authority. And he says, no. And Moses, and then God explains, okay, let me show you. And he performs miracles for Moses. Literally turns his staff into a snake, his hand into a disease, and then heals it. And then Moses said, oh, that's good stuff, I'll go. No, Moses said to the Lord, pardon your servant, Lord, but I've never been eloquent, neither in the past nor since you have spoken to your servant. I am slow of speech and tongue. I don't know what I could say. I'll just get all tongue-tied. And it actually says that God burned in anger. Like, come on, Moses. So he says, okay, I'm already sending Aaron. I love it. Aaron's already on his way because I knew you were going to try to worm your way out of this four times. Right? This is what we do too. I've already talked to so-and-so and they'll be an assistant group leader. I don't even know where that's coming from, but someone's supposed to lead a group. All right. So God says, Aaron's already on his way. He'll speak for you. Now he's answered every one of Moses' reasons of why he cannot step up in leadership. And he says, I'll go? No. Moses said, pardon your servant, Lord. Please send somebody else. Are you kidding me? Hang the jersey. I mean, this is a man of faith. No, he's just like you and me. No, he's just like you and me. Reluctant, reluctant, reluctant. Verse 29, he finally goes and he takes the people of Israel out. And then it says in verse 29, by faith the people of Israel passed through the Red Sea as on dry land, but when the Egyptians tried to do so, they were drowned. Sounds amazing, heroic story. Let me read to you the story in Exodus 14 of this large group of complainers. As Pharaoh approached, the Israelites looked up and there were the Egyptians marching after them. They had gotten out after all those miracles and the plagues, and they come to their first obstacle. It's been like a week of this freedom that they've been dying to have, and they were terrified and cried out to the Lord. Wait a minute. Verse 29, by faith the people passed through the Red Sea. They were terrified and cried out to the Lord. In verse 11, they then said to Moses, "Was it because there were no graves in Egypt that you brought us out to the desert to die?" Okay, now we've gone too far. None of you ever complain to God like this, do you? You don't lower yourselves to that level. I know, but they're below us. "What have you done to us by bringing us out of Egypt? Didn't we say to you in Egypt, 'Leave us alone, let us serve the Egyptians'?" But no, they didn't, by the way. "It would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the desert." I'm just having a hard time reconciling. And by faith, the people passed through the Red Sea, and the Egyptians tried to do so, and they were drowned. What in the world? I mean, this guy's out in left field, whoever wrote this. Or maybe faith looks a little differently than what we think it does, right? Okay, there's not many more. Verse 31, there's Rahab the prostitute. Let's not even talk about her. She was a prostitute, but she made the list simply because she saw the spies come into Jericho and said, "Hey, I'll house you," and she survived. In fact, quite honestly, the prostitute's doing a lot better than most of these other people. I mean, just be honest. Then he rounds off the list in 32. What shall I say? Do I have more? I don't even have time to tell you about. By this point, I'm like, "Dear God, don't tell me about anybody else. These people are miserable people. They have no faith." And he says, "No, if I only had time, I'd tell you about Gideon, Barak, Samson." Samson? Did anybody catch that earlier? Like, what? Samson, Jephthah, and David, and Samuel. Like, David, yes, we have a good one. Well, hold on here, just a minute. Let's break this down. Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, David, and Samuel. He said, "I'm going to round off the Hall of Famers here. If I only had time, I could tell you these stories." Well, let's just really quick. Gideon, you remember Gideon? God found him and said, "You mighty warrior." And he was hiding in a barn, scared to death. And God says, "I'm going to use you to defeat the Midianites." He's like, "No, you're not. I am not going. I will not lead that group." No way, God. God says, "No, I'm going to do this." And he says, "No, prove it." And he made him do it three times, a miracle, just to prove that God was really going to do what he said. And then in the end, he was still so terrified that God said, "Okay, sneak over to the camp." And he listened to all the people talk about how Gideon was going to come and destroy them. And finally, like, he gained some faith after God works with him over and over and over again to tell him it's going to be okay. That's Gideon. Ooh, man. Person of faith. Barak. I don't even get Barak at all. You will find his story, I think, in Judges chapter 6. I'm like, Barak? He served as the commander of the army for Deborah. Deborah was the judge. Come on, ladies. Why is it the guy's always getting the credit when it should have been the woman? It's totally true. And so he comes. Deborah tells Barak, "Go and attack the army." I think it was the Midianites again. "Go and attack them. God's going to deliver them. He has spoken to me." And Barak's like, "No, I'm not going. I'm not going unless you go," right? And she's like, "Oh, jeez, like, fine, but you won't get the credit." And sure enough, another woman in Deborah got the credit, but Barak's jersey's hanging in the gym. I don't get it. He had no faith. He wouldn't even go on his own. Where's Deborah? I mean, for goodness sakes, we don't have enough women to begin with. There's your chance, writer of Hebrews. Get the women in the list. He doesn't do it. Why? Okay, Samson. Let's just skip past Samson. He had serious sexual addictions and issues. I just don't even want to say about him. Jephthah, he is an exiled bastard son of a family in southern Judah. He was born of a prostitute, and his rest of his brothers and sisters mocked him and made fun of him and made him leave the nation because they said, your mom was a prostitute, your dad had you with a whore, you don't belong here, and he had to leave. He was completely exiled. For whatever reason, I don't know why, when they got attacked by, I think, the Philistines, the people of Judah came and said, "Jephthah, would you come and would you save us?" He has to, first of all, overcome what's already happened in his life and the way that people have characterized him. But then, really what Jephthah is known for, if you know the story, probably many of you don't, but it's one of the most bizarre stories in the Old Testament. I mean, this is this hero of faith. He is not really sure, once he comes back to Judah, that God's really going to deliver. So he also cajoles God. He makes a bargain with him. He says, "If you'll do this, then I'll know that you'll be with me." He, in other words, doesn't have much faith. And he says, "God, if you will give me victory, then I will kill whatever comes through my tent door." Foolish. Stupidity. Because do you remember the story? Who walks through his tent door? His daughter. Right? And then people read that and they think, because it alludes to the fact that he either killed his daughter or he made her one of the prophets so she was not married. Whatever, And people read that and go, how could God let that happen? No, that's exactly what happens when people don't listen and trust in God, and they trust in themselves, or they do silly things like that. They end up sacrificing and destroying things that don't need to be destroyed. And this is the guy whose jersey we're talking about. What? I don't get it. The last two, you, David, okay, we got David. Yes, somebody whose jersey we're proud to hang. Kind of. I mean, he did have that thing with Bathsheba, you know. If you don't know, I mean, his best friend, like one of his closest friends, like when he was away at war, he had an affair with his wife, and then he tried to trick him into coming home on leave and get her pregnant so that no one would know that he did that. Oof. But he wouldn't do it because he was so honorable, so he sent him back and he had him killed, and then he married his wife. I mean, that, I don't know, make the jersey a little lower, right? And then at the end of his life, not only does he have some family issues, but then he takes a census. I'm guessing, I don't know this, but I'm guessing as he's getting to the end of his life, he's wanting to measure and evaluate, have I been successful? Has my life mattered and counted? And he takes a census to know, what does my fighting army look like against God? And it causes great pain and death to the nation of Israel. David wasn't perfect either. Don't think for a second. He was a great king, but he made some serious mistakes and had some bad judgment. And then Samuel, he was a great prophet, but he also had his feelings hurt when people chose a king over him. And ultimately, he didn't even know how to choose the right king because God says, man, you look like everyone else. You don't look at the heart like I do. He wasn't perfect either. All right, so what's the point, guys? People love Ancestry.com. I'm telling you, if you lick the swab or give them your blood and they tell you, like, here's your family, you're not excited about this list. You're like, I thought I was related to George Washington or something. No, you're Barak. Jephthah, Samson. And aren't you glad? Aren't you glad the writer of Hebrews said, you know, the people who are heroes of faith are just like you. They're just like you. They stumble and they fall. They don't believe all the time. They still have problems and addictions in their life. I swear this is why he did not call out the people that I would have called out. You give me the chapter to hang the jerseys, and I'm putting Joseph up there. Not because he said to take my bones with you. I would do Joseph because he saved the world. I would put Caleb and Joshua. Where is Caleb and Joshua? How about Deborah instead of Barak, the loser? Where's Deborah's jersey? Daniel, he purposely doesn't even say Daniel's name. He just said somebody tamed the lion's mouths. Somebody didn't die in the fiery furnace. He didn't say Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Why? Because those people, we don't know their whole lives. We don't know their mistakes. We just know their high points of victory. And that's not what it looks like in normal life following God. You stumble and you fall and you struggle to believe. You go through times of darkness and hurt and you're not sure what you believe anymore. And God just calls out to you and says, don't trust in yourself. Don't trust in those things. You stay focused on me. It doesn't always look perfect. It doesn't always look pretty. But when you do not let go of just, God, I don't know. It's the Father that started this whole series. God, I believe, but help my unbelief. That is a hero of faith. I believe, but help my unbelief. I don't see how it's going to work out. I don't see how this can change. But God, I will not turn somewhere else. And God says, hang the jersey. It's not on you. It's not about you being perfect. It's about you believing in the one who is. All of their faith could not be made perfect until ours. Why? Because the perfect, faithful one came whose name is Jesus. He was the one who had perfect faith and perfect life that we could not live. So you know what? This is me, and this is my ancestry.com. I am like Abraham, who gets tired of waiting and takes matters into my own hands. I am like Sarah, who laughs and is cynical at times to what God says is possible. I'm Jacob, who is confused and deceived by my circumstances. I'm Moses' parents, who don't know what else to do, so you just stick it in a basket and hope that something turns out right. I'm Moses, who is reluctant and reluctant and reluctant. I'm Israel, who wanted to turn back and was angry with God. I am Gideon, who has serious trust issues. I'm Barak, who refuses to go alone. I'm Samson, who can never get his act together and overcome his addictions. I'm Jephthah, because I have a shameful past and I try to bargain with God instead of trusting in him. And I am David, who makes poor choices. And I can still be a hero of the faith if when my life is over, all I know is that I trust in Jesus. It doesn't go perfectly. It doesn't go the way we want. And God knows it. That's why he says, in the midst of the darkness, you trust in me. He wraps all of Hebrews 11 around this verse 6. Without faith, it is impossible to please God. Please him. What does this mean? Because anyone who comes to him must believe that he exists and that he rewards those who earnestly seek him. You can't do this on your own. You can't accomplish it on your own. You can't trust yourself. All you can do in the midst of life, especially in the times of darkness, is just trust in God. Have faith in him. And what is God? So ultimately, all of them did not have perfect faith, but what do they have in common? God was pleased with them because of the faith that they did have. And I want you to know today, that's the message I felt the Lord wanted me to speak to you. That you know what, just because you've stumbled, just because you've doubted, just because you've struggled, just because you've taken matters in your own hands, doesn't mean that God is not still pleased with you. Do you have faith in him and in his son Jesus? God says, I'm pleased with you enough that you make my wall of faith. Because God says, I know that it's hard. I know you can't see it all. That's why I'm asking you to trust in me. Would you stand to your feet this morning? We're going to close the service by singing that song again here in just a moment. There's another in the fire standing next to me. But I really want you to know today that if your heart is to know God and to seek him, he is pleased with your faith. That's what that verse 6 means. What does God require? What does he want of a person of faith? To believe that God exists, to simply acknowledge him and his voice. You know what was true of every single person on that list? Each of them had, in their own way, an encounter with God, and they just simply responded to it. God spoke to them in a dream. He spoke to them in their heart. He nudged them wherever it was. God met them, and God says, you know what? I am pleased with you just simply because you responded to me speaking to you. Can you do that today? Can you just acknowledge him? God, I think you exist. God, I think you're there. And number two, you believe that God rewards. Well, that's not a bad thing to believe. That God rewards, that what? He is faithful to give us what faith is, all that we hope for and all that we cannot see. God, I believe you exist, and I believe that you're going to do those things, even though I can't see it, even though I can't figure it out. And then lastly, those that have faith are just those that continue to seek him in your waiting and in your struggle. You don't know. You don't get it. It is not perfect. But where else are you going to go? Heroes of the faith in this whole list, they all died waiting for their promises to be fulfilled. And some of us will wait for the promises to be fulfilled. But they admitted they were strangers and foreigners on earth, waiting for a better kingdom, a better city, where all things would come together. So I want you to think about this while you sing the song. So how do we have this kind of faith? It's not that we want to be happy with faith that's not perfect, but how do I grow in my faith? Well, the Bible says this, therefore, Hebrews 12, we love to quote this, but we don't do it in context. Hebrews 12, 1 through 4, therefore, now that we are surrounded by such a huge crowd of witnesses, aren't you glad now that the crowd of witnesses over your life are not perfect people, but people just like you that are cheering you on saying, hold on. I made mistakes too, but hold on, because my life tells you he's faithful. This huge crowd of witnesses to the life of faith, let us strip off every weight that slows us down, especially the sin that so easily trips us up, and let us run with endurance the race that God set out before us. How do we do all this? We do this by keeping our eyes on Jesus, the champion who initiates and perfects our faith. Because of the joy awaiting him, he endured the cross, he discarded its shame, and now he is seated in the place of honor beside God's throne. Think of all the hostility he endured from sinful people that you won't become weary and give up. You know what verse is really beautiful and all that? Is verse 16 in Hebrews 11. And it said that God is not ashamed to be called their God. You know that God is not ashamed to be called your God, no matter what you've done, no matter how you've struggled, no matter what you've gone through, no matter what kind of struggling you've had of faith, that when you say, I believe in your son Jesus, God is not ashamed of you ever. He says, you're trusting in the only faithful one. No one's ever been faithful. When you trust in the only faithful one, I am not ashamed of you, but I reward you with life evermore. Let's sing the song to the Lord today and just know that Jesus is with you. You've not done anything. If your heart today is to trust in Jesus, God is pleased with you. He is pleased with you. Let's sing the song, he is with us, and we'll close together.
another in the fire, standing next to me. It was another in the waters, holding back the seas. Should I ever need reminding of how I've been set free? There's a cross that bears the burden, where another died for me. There's another in the fire. All my dead left for dead beneath the water. I'm no longer a slave to my sin anymore. Should I fall in the space between what remains of me and this reckoning? Either way, I won't bow to the things of this world.
I just, Lord, both serves put on my heart. Just sense someone here in this service, just you've lost your spouse. God's just saying, you are not alone. Look to Jesus. A young person here, you feel like you're the only one of your friends who is following God or trying to follow him and trust in him. God is saying to you to look to Jesus. A mom that is here and you just feel all alone and abandoned in this world and life of trying to raise kids on your own, God is saying to look unto Jesus. Don't give up. Wherever you are, whatever you're facing right now, you look to Jesus, the faithful one. You put your faith in him and he will be with you in every season, in every place, and especially in those places of darkness. He goes with you. Jesus, we thank you for that promise. May people be encouraged today, and may they not leave under a false condemnation or guilt, God, that they have not been able to trust or have enough faith, and therefore, God, you've turned against them or you've rejected them. No, God. Lord, if we express our faith in your son, Jesus, you said you are pleased with us, and may we know that and be confident of it. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen. Amen. Some of you probably need prayer for some of these things. Please come down and let us pray with you before you go today. And we have people down front love to pray with you. It'd be so important for you. God bless you as you go. And spend some time here before you head off if you can. And just hang out with some folks. Pray with each other. Spend time together. Go to the cafe and have a wonderful day, okay? We'll see you next Sunday.